Welcome to the SOAP Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We are working our way through the Gospel of John, and we're only a couple of weeks into it, but we're coming to some longer chapters, and so it's not like we're doing a chapter a day this week.
Right.
We're only getting like a chapter and a half this time through.
So. Yeah, and they are packed full of stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're building on each other too. So it makes sense that we talk about last week. But last week we talked about Jesus having an interaction with two individual people.
Yeah.
And it's kind of cool. He's starting out with individuals.
Yeah.
And we'll
and
see.
They couldn't be more different.
But yet there were some similarities.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so in chapter 3, Jesus talked about a religious leader by the name of Nicodemus, and it seems that he was sent by the Pharisees specifically to talk with Jesus and verify, you know, what are you teaching?
Yeah.
Right?
Who are you? Where are you from? What are you teaching? Right. Yeah.
Yeah, Nicodemus called Jesus rabbi, which is good. You know, you're a teacher. And he said, we, which we took to be the Pharisees as a whole, know that you come from God. And he acknowledged that Jesus was performing miraculous signs.
Yeah.
And you made a note that, that'll come to an end.
Yeah.
But they said so here.
Yeah.
But it stops there, right? So miraculous signs should have been an indication that he was a prophet or their Messiah, or at least they should talk more about it. But Nicodemus didn't.
Yeah.
Right? It was almost like he assumed, that can't be this guy.
Yeah.
And Jesus talks to Nicodemus about being the Son of Man, or about the Son of Man, but he doesn't attribute it to himself either.
Yeah, not as clearly as we would, you know, maybe like him to. Now he will this week,
but
he didn't.
Right. Yeah. Well, or how much he attributed it to the next person in chapter 4 from last week. So Jesus talks to a Samaritan woman, very different conversation. Jesus tells her about her marriages and history, right? I know about you type of thing. And she responds with, I see you're a prophet.
Yeah.
I mean,
no.
Different.
Yeah. You've got the leader who should be watching for the prophet or for the Messiah, and he doesn't seem to acknowledge it. And this lady does, right?
Right. Yeah. In fact, not even a good Jewish lady, right?
Right.
A Samaritan lady.
Right.
And Jesus tells her that he is the Messiah. And he is at this point because Israel hasn't rejected him yet. And then the woman tells her people, and many people came to Jesus and believed in him.
Yep.
Which is exactly what he's looking for.
Yeah.
And he's not getting it out of his own nation.
Yeah, yeah. And he ends up, there's actually a third one we sort of glossed over last time, but the synagogue leader, Jesus did a miracle for the synagogue leader's son. So there is a person, you know, John doesn't go into a lot of depth, but John is showing Jesus doing a lot of these interactions. There were group miracles, there were big mass preachings. John, and we'll see that in chapter 6, but John is sort of leading with some of these individual, these personalized things, right?
Yeah, so in chapter 5, Jesus goes back to Jerusalem for a Jewish feast. He intentionally goes to a large pool by the Sheep's Gate, and it has 5 covered walkways. And the idea here is the sick, the blind, the poor, the paralyzed, they lay in this walkway.
Yeah.
And apparently, though, the way that the water sometimes enters the pool, it stirs up the minerals in there. And the thought process was disabled people thought the first person in the pool would be healed.
Yeah.
You know, kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah, there was a superstition around that. Now, depending on the translation that you're reading from, you may notice that your Bible might skip from verse 3 to verse 5. You're like, hold on a second, where's verse 4?
It's in there.
Yeah, maybe verse 4. It's a typo, right? Maybe verse 4 is in there, but there's a study note or a marginal note or something like that, right? So basically, here's what happened.
And translation's different,
and
too,
translation's
right?
a little bit different, yeah. So the second half of verse 3 and all of verse 4 doesn't appear in any copies, in any manuscripts for the first 400 years. It's an addition later on. Mm-hmm. Probably what happened is somebody put a note in the margin about the superstition, about the angel stirring it up and people jumped in and that sort of thing. Probably put it in the margin or as a study note or something. Right. And it got copied in unintentionally over time.
Right.
This was a thousand years.
And now it became gospel.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And the reason you say, well, how can that happen? Because this was a thousand years, up to a thousand years before the verse numbers were added. There were no verse numbers. So they just kept copying, right?
And copies of copies.
And copies of copies of copies. And so I don't think it was intentional. I don't think somebody was trying to sabotage it, but it was a superstition at that time. Right. But it certainly wasn't John. It's in none of the original, we don't have the original. It's in none of the oldest ones that we do have.
Yeah,
There's not even space for
that verse and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's not there.
Right. Okay. So Jesus saw a man who'd been disabled for 38 years.
Mm-hmm.
I love that number, right?
Yeah.
Not 40, not 30.
30. Yeah. That adds authenticity to it, credibility to it, because it's, you know, you don't just make up 38. You know?
Yeah. And Jesus asked him if he wanted to become well. And I love it. He doesn't answer. You know, a yes, no question.
Yeah.
He answers with, I don't have anybody to put me in the water when it's stirred up.
Yeah.
Again, right.
Yeah, the super
knowing that he could be healed by that, or believing that he could be healed by that.
You know, it almost makes sense, right? Because you're disabled for 38 years. You've tried how many times over all this time? He's like, I have no one to help, right? You just sort of jaded or cynical by this point, right?
So Jesus tells the man to stand up, pick up his mat, and walk. The man is immediately healed. He picks up his mat and starts walking after 38 years.
Yeah. No atrophy, no physical therapy, you know, no walker.
Yeah. And by the way, this happens on the Sabbath.
Yeah, I think Jesus did that on purpose. Oh, I think definitely. Jesus really liked healing people on the Sabbath day. Yeah,
now, just tweaking.
Yeah, right. But that actually, not the Sabbath part, but this is actually my favorite part of the whole thing, is how many people were there? You said five covered porticos, porches, everything. I mean, there's people everywhere. And Jesus has healed lots of people, hundreds or thousands of people, all this. But this time, he walks past people. He steps over people, potentially, in my mind, he does, right?
Right.
He said, excuse me. Gets up to that guy.
Yeah.
He heals one person, and then he turns around, and we see that he disappears. He just walks away.
Right. How many more would have been, hey, wait
a minute. Why? Yeah. This was personal. This was not assembly lined. Not that Jesus ever did that. You know, next, take a number. But, I mean, there are times he healed hundreds of thousands of people. This time? It was just this guy. So we're talking about these individual conversations.
Yeah,
here's one of them.
Yeah. So Jesus later finds the same man at the temple, and he said to him, don't sin anymore, lest worse happens to you.
Yeah.
And then this man informed the Jewish leaders that Jesus was the one who made him well.
Yeah, so I think the don't sin anymore.
Right.
It's called an imperative in Greek. It's a command, and there are a couple of different ways to translate it. I'm not sure that on anymore, because it makes it sound like
the reason you're disabled
is because you were sinning.
Yep.
And I don't see that anywhere in the text, right? So I think the idea of don't sin is the Pharisees or the leaders had asked who healed you. They're trying to, they're already rejecting, starting to reject Jesus. They're trying to figure out and get accusations against him, right? Was this Jesus, you know, type thing? He's like, he's gone. I don't know, you know, whatever.
Yeah, right.
So I think the whole don't sin was, you need to make a decision now. You can turn me in and something bad is going to happen to you, because now we're talking about rejecting Jesus, you know, turning him over, betraying him, eternal consequences.
Yeah. So you take it that far?
I do. I really do. I think it's, you have a decision to make now, and choose wisely, right?
Okay.
What did he do? He turned around and ran straight to them. Oh, Jesus did it.
Right.
And I don't think it was, yay, Jesus, like we're going to see in chapter 9.
Yeah.
I think this was a, ha, I got it, Jesus did it.
Well, and more than likely, it was also, look, you're in trouble because you worked on the Sabbath. You picked up your mat, you walked away, and instead of being...
It's not my fault.
Right. I didn't ask to be... He didn't ask to be healed.
Right.
He didn't.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was my point.
Yeah. So I think he did exactly what Jesus told him not to do, actually.
Okay.
Okay. But that's my opinion, you know, not everybody agrees with that, but I do think.
Well, here's the deal. The Jewish leaders, they totally ignored the miracle, which we were talking about. Nicodemus, same thing he did. The Samaritan woman, completely different. I see that you're a prophet. So they ignored the miracle again, the sign of Messiah or prophet. We're not even going to talk to them about that. And they focused on the healing that happened on the Sabbath, which they thought was a sin. So they started to persecute him.
Yeah.
And they brought him in, and Jesus answered them, and he answers for 30 verses.
Yeah. this is like a monologue for the rest of the chapter.
It is. And the cool thing in here is we get to learn a lot more about Jesus and his relationship with God.
This is a huge, what we would call, if in theology, a Christological passage. It's the doctrine of the Christ, you know, who he is, why he does what he does, where he gets his authority, you know, what's coming in the future. This is a really, really important passage to take slowly.
Yeah, so Jesus starts out with, my Father is working now and I too am working.
Yep.
The Jewish leaders said, tried even harder to kill him because of this. Because not only had he broken the Sabbath, which was punishable by death, but he also made himself equal to God.
Yeah, this is the whole thing right here. There are so many people, Jesus never claimed to be God and all that, right? That is not how they understood it. They knew exactly what he was doing. He was claiming deity. And that's why they had him crucified. You being a man, make yourself out to be God. That was the whole thing.
Jesus, yes.
Yeah. No argument here.
Yeah. So here's some of the things that we can get out of these 30 verses. The son can't do anything on his own, only what he sees the father doing, right? So he's doing the father's will. We hear that in a different way.
Yep.
The father loves the son and shows him everything that he does.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Both the father and son can raise the dead and give them life, and the son can give life to whoever he wishes.
Yeah.
Right. Which seems to be a little bit more, right? That he's not just doing what the father says. He also has a responsibility that he can pick and choose.
Yep.
Who he wants to give life to. All judgment has been assigned to the son.
Yep.
I mean, how huge is that? Yep. Right. Jesus saying,
I'm the final judge.
Everyone.
I am the final judge.
Right. Right. I love the next one. The one who does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him.
Yeah.
And we'll see the Pharisees breaking this in a minute.
Yep.
But the whole idea is, if you don't believe I am who I say I am, that also means you don't believe the Father.
Right. Yeah.
And the Father's spirit is not in you.
Yep.
Verse 24, we said that we were going to try to bring out some of the evangelical passages. Jesus says, the one who hears my message and believes the one who sent me, which is what we just talked about before, has eternal life and will not be condemned.
Yep. But has crossed over from death to life. There is an awakening. There is a born againness. There is a new life there that wasn't there before,
right? Jesus calls himself the Son of Man. You had said we were going to see it.
Here's where we see it.
Mm-hmm. And then a time is coming when all in the tombs will hear his voice and they will come out and be judged.
Yep.
And I think that's awesome because we see it in some of the Gospels after the resurrection.
Yep.
You know, he's giving it 3 years beforehand.
Yeah, yeah. So he is, again, not only going to be the judge of all things, but he and the one who brings back to life. But there is a resurrection coming,
right?
And it is his voice that will make it happen.
Jesus acknowledged that John the Baptist was testifying about himself, about Jesus. And, you know, he's still talking to the Jewish leadership here. And he says to them, you do not have the Father's word in you because you don't acknowledge the Son who he sent.
Yep.
Again, tying back into what he had said before.
Yep.
And then he says, Moses is going to accuse you because Moses wrote about me.
Yep. Yep.
I could see, right, them rejecting them, I could see how inflammatory his words would have been to them.
And he acknowledged, listen, you study the Bible, you study the scriptures, and you think that you have eternal life because you study the scriptures. Yeah. But the scriptures are pointing to me, right? And because you don't believe in me, you can study the Bible all you want. You can read the Bible all you want. That's not what gives life. That's not what brings salvation, right? The scriptures, the Bible, is a means to an end. They are not the end themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just a textbook.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's applied.
Yep. Applied. But he says, not that you can't come to me, but that you won't. You're not even willing to come to me. You are happy in your tradition. You are stuck where you are, and you're happy being stuck where you are. And you're not willing to change. And you're not going to change if you're not willing to.
Right. We get into chapter 6. We're only going to verse 24 this week. We start out with the feeding of the 5,000. So this miracle appears in all four Gospels.
Yeah.
We get way different versions of it.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that John doesn't even bring up, well, he brings up the crowd, but nothing of what Jesus taught them.
No, in fact, so this is one of the, if not the longest chapter in the Gospel of John. And it has two huge miracles, which he almost glosses over.
Right.
Because the miracle is, which is really weird, because these signs are written so that you may believe. Right. So he gives these two miracles, but most of the chapter is dedicated to Jesus teaching after the miracles, about right. the miracles.
Right.
Right. Fun fact.
And the other guys have covered the miracle.
They've already covered it. Right. Yeah. Fun fact, you mentioned that the feeding of the 5,000 men is mentioned in all four Gospels. Other than the resurrection, it's the only one of the miracles that's in all four Gospels. That's how big of a deal it is. And John is the only one who gives the long discourse afterward.
Right. So Jesus is back up north on the Sea of Galilee. He's been doing miracles, so a big crowd has been following him. Jesus goes up to the mountainside. People follow him.
Yeah. Right?
People are starting to follow him now.
Well, and there's a reason for that. Well, there's a reason that he's on the mountainside, actually. If you go to the other Gospels, especially Matthew, John the Baptist has been executed. John doesn't tell us that.
Right.
John the Baptist has been executed. He's Jesus' relative, cousin, something, right? Jesus is now trying to get away from the crowds. He needs to go away and grieve. And every time he goes somewhere, they keep following.
Right.
He's about ready to start talking about his own death to the disciples. He needs a little leadership retreat with them. People keep swarming around. Every time he goes away to a mountain, every time he goes away somewhere, they keep following him. Here, he went to the other side of the lake, right? They followed him to the other side of the lake. So this whole thing is Jesus is in grief and he can't get a break. He needs to work with his disciples. He can't get a break, and he's still ministering to all these people. I mean, there's an emotional side of this that John doesn't really pick up on,
right?
But that's what's going on.
Right. So Jesus goes up to the mountainside. All the people follow. Jesus says to his disciples, "Hey, where can we buy bread for the crowd?"
Yeah.
Now, Jesus knows exactly what's going to happen. In my mind, this gets them thinking about their responsibility.
Yeah.
One is, hey, we have a responsibility to feed these people. Hey, we don't have the funds to feed these people. What are we going to do?
Yes.
Type of thing. So a boy had 5 barley loaves. That's, I believe, one of the cheapest, if not cheaper, breads that are there.
Yeah, and two fish. Probably like dinner roll size or a little bit bigger than dinner roll. I mean, it wasn't much. Yeah.
And again, not that Jesus glosses over this part, but like you said, it's not explained in great detail.
Yeah.
Jesus had the people sit. He takes the loaves. He gives thanks. He distributes the loaves out to the people and fish after he blessed the fish also. And they end up with 12 baskets with broken pieces.
Yeah.
12 baskets of broken pieces.
Yeah, leftovers. After everyone eats their full fill.
Right.
And this is 5,000 men. Plus women, plus children. Obviously, there's at least one child there.
Right.
Yeah. There's thousands and thousands of people.
Right.
And Jesus literally is creating food on the fly. He reaches and creates more.
And John acknowledges that the people understood what was going on too, right?
Yeah.
The people saw the miracle.
Yeah.
And they say, hey, this guy is a prophet.
Yeah.
Jesus knew that they were going to seize him. They were going to force him to be king. So he withdrew.
Yeah. So again, the prophet, just like when the leaders, the Pharisees, were asking John, are you Elijah? Are you the prophet? This is not just any prophet. This is the prophet that Moses promised in Deuteronomy 18. God will raise up a prophet like me from among you. And it's a messianic reference. Is it possible that he's the Messiah? They're still wrestling with this. Let's make him king. Because if he can do this,
this
is we're golden. We're golden.
Right. So that evening, the disciples get in the boat, and they're gonna cross the Sea of Galilee and go to Capernaum.
Again, Jesus needs some time away. He's going to pray. He's going to grieve. And so he even sends the disciples away.
Yeah, so the wind was strong. The sea was rough. They had rowed 3 to 4 miles. If you look at a map, it really depends on what they said. You know, he's on the other side. If he's straight across, it's about 3 or 4 miles. If he's down, it's probably closer to 15 miles.
Yeah.
But anyways,
they knew this. They remember at least 4 of them were fishermen. They've known, they know every square inch of this lake.
Right. And they know it's going to get, they know it can get rough.
Yeah. But they've never had been anything like this before.
Yeah. So after rowing 3 to 4 miles, they caught sight of Jesus walking on the lake and coming near the boat. I mean, I laugh. We would be the same way. We'd be petrified.
Yeah.
The disciples were frightened. Jesus said, "Do not be afraid." And then a little different, they came to land.
So that was also a miracle. So that's just sort of like a sub-miracle. So he's walking across. He gets into their boat. Not only does the storm immediately calm, but they are teleported or transported across. So, it's not like they were 10 yards 10 away, feet away. And all of a sudden, cleared up and we're here. No, they were immediately moved. Notice also he doesn't mention Peter walking on the water here.
Exactly. And then he says the next day the people realized that Jesus wasn't there, so that would have been the spot they were before feeding of the 5,000 men. And the crowd followed along to go to Capernaum.
Yeah, how'd you get over here? Which is where we'll pick up next time.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot going on. Hopefully we brought out some things you hadn't thought about before, or things to at least think about.
Yeah. Yeah, and there may be some questions, you know, maybe you ask about that verse that seems to be missing or something. It was added, it was missing, you know, depending on your perspective. That's the type of stuff we'd love to help you study more. So if you have questions about that, make sure you send them our way, post them in the comments or email or something, and we are happy to help you study through those things. Next time we finish in chapter 6, that's really the point of what he's trying to get to with the miracles. Right. So we stopped a little early this week just so we didn't get, I didn't want to stop in the middle of the teaching.
Well, the miracles are always great, but they're not necessarily the teaching.
They don't stand alone. So why is the miracle there? We'll pick up on that next time. That's what we'll pick up. So see you then.
Bye.